You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
We have four great speakers. We could have had about 20 on this issue, given all the different players in the mobile marketplace. But we wanted to kind of look at mobile privacy and what is different about mobile privacy in this particular space. In our introduction, I think in the description we had on the website, we started asking fundamental questions about what is privacy, which is such, whenever somebody asks me what is privacy, I'm so terribly bored by the question. But I think more and more, we still don't know the answer to that. The Federal Trade Commission is talking a lot about context. Professor Nussbaum from NYU talks about context quite a bit, which strikes me as kind of like it's all relative. And that's really tricky when you're talking from a regulatory or legislative perspective as Congress and the Federal Trade Commission, the White House, are looking at. So we also have a lot of different players in the mobile marketplace. We have app providers, we have operating system providers, platform providers, we have carriers, we have hardware manufacturers, we have all these players that, you know, again, same online space, but they seem to converge in the mobile device and a device that we all view as very personal. So there's a lot of questions that we want to get to. What is privacy? How are we dealing with this? What's coming down the pipe with regard to legislation and regulation? And where do we go forward with industry best practices and the like? I think the overview, I would say, is that the Federal Trade Commission, the White House, have come up with the respective privacy papers in many ways. In some ways, they've asked for legislation in some areas. They've asked for enhanced best practices, better disclosures, multi-stakeholder processes. They've kind of set a clock is ticking type thing where the industry groups have to get together and with consumer advocates and the like and kind of get out the rules of the road. And the question is that how possible is that given what we don't know about what is privacy and who's responsible on the mobile operating system? So let me just introduce you to our panelists that are going to kind of hash out these questions. I'm going to introduce them, ask them to tell us everything they know about privacy in the mobile space in like 4 minutes. And then we'll just ask some moderated questions and get questions from you. So first off, we're very, very pleased to have Patty Poss, who's the new chief of the Consumer Protection Mobile Technology Unit at the Federal Trade Commission. If you would have asked me 5 years ago whether the Federal Trade Commission would have a mobile technology unit, I'd say you're crazy. They would say that's the Federal Communications Commission's job. But obviously, I mean, just the fact that this mobile technology unit exists is a really, really stunning thing, in my view, because I've been around for a very long time, and strikes me as really, really fascinating that this exists. Patty's been with the commission for a fair amount of time. She authors of the Mobile Apps for Kids report, current privacy disclosures. Patty's probably going to talk about the agenda for the disclosures for privacy workshop on May 30th is coming up. The agenda was announced yesterday, so Patty will probably talk about that. Then we'll go to Ashkan Sultani, who's an independent consultant researcher. Ashkan has done a lot of great work for the Federal Trade Commission. He's also done a lot of great work for the Wall Street Journal's One Thing No campaign, which I probably got close to a Pulitzer. It was like a hair away from getting a Pulitzer, is that right? Good job. Then Sarah Hutchins, she's with the Interactive Advertising Bureau, which is a huge trade association of online advertisers. It's been around for quite a while. Before that, Sarah was with the Entertainment Software Association. And then Todd Moore, who is the founder of TMSoft. And Todd is an app developer. He's also participating in some public policy work organizations here and also some best practices type things. So welcome, Todd. Let me just also note that the Wi-Fi for today says Talk to Bell. It's open. I don't know what the security is. It's so use it at your own risk. And the hashtag for this particular conference is #POTN. So let me just go. Let me start off with Patty. Patty, welcome. face-to-face or in-person sales kind of situation where you have a telemarketing sales role type of scenario, any communications, any way that companies and the industry is working to meet consumers. So, and as we move from telemarketing to the internet, and now we just see this as an extension of the internet, the mobile space. But there are certainly some differences. And so while the FTC Act applies, as Tim was pointing out, it's another channel, and the FTC Act and many of the rules we enforce apply in this space. It is somewhat different, and there are some unique things. So our group is looking at also making sure we're aware of what's different, what's new, what's creating new challenges, and strategizing for making sure we're protecting consumers in this space. So some of the things that are different, and I'm sure we're going to get into them, and Tim highlighted several, but I just want to make sure, because it relates to our workshop and our privacy work, is certainly that screen size is a real issue. We've heard it raised many times, and we're not going to solve all of that, even at our workshop on the 30th, but the screen size creates some challenges. But for privacy purposes, there's a lot of other things like this. The very personal nature of the device, certainly the hardware capabilities that can be put in the device, and some of them can be in a PC also, like a microphone or a camera, you're carrying it around all the time. That on-the-go use, constantly connected, the ability to turn things on at any time. But location is also one of those big differences. The GPS capabilities and others, that constant ability to connect with other devices as you're walking around that identify who you are and leave a trail. And also just the ease of sharing information. I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about apps today. And many of them are designed so that I don't have to sit and type everything in. Because I don't like actually doing that with my finger, but it's also just very, very difficult. But that ease of transferring communications has some implications too, but consumers understand what's going on. So those are some of the key differences. I just want to briefly, I'm guessing we'll also get into this too, talk about our privacy report. Our final report came out last month, or 2 months ago now. It has a basic framework if you haven't had a chance to see it, but it's not a regulation, it's guidance to industry, but it has three basic principles. And first, and I just want to highlight a couple that apply to mobile. The three basic principles are instituting privacy by design into your products. So as industry is developing, we're the call is to have them think about privacy in every step of the product development. And the second is simplified consumer choice. Try to make it easy for consumers to make decisions. Don't give me all kinds of information. Tell me at the key time. And then the third is transparency, where you're making it, having a place where consumers can go to figure out what's going on. But the three call-outs that are in that report that I see for mobile, the first two of them are under the privacy by design. And the first for the mobile industry is don't collect more than you need. This is like the wallpaper app that's collecting location, something that doesn't actually relate to the need of the app. So the first call is to don't collect more than you need. The second is a call to the mobile participants to establish standards for data collection, transfer, sharing, all of those, and use all of those things to establish some standards. And then the third call is related to our workshop, which I'll just briefly touch on. It is to improve the transparency, to give consumers clear, concise, and easy-to-read information about what's happening with their data. And one of the things we want to do is have this workshop on May 30th, if you didn't see the agenda, it came out yesterday, to talk about how can you do this, how can you effectively, this is a real challenge, how can you effectively disclose to consumers what's happening with their information on this tiny screen, and make it meaningful so that they understand and can make an informed decision. And I also want to just pitch that at that workshop, there's also going to be a panel that talks about mobile advertising issues, which is different than the privacy issues, but it's how you can make sure consumers get all the disclosure, for instance, how you make sure consumers get disclosures when you're putting together an ad that's going to come up on the mobile space. Thanks, Tony.
So mobile phones, mobile devices, these are kind of these new, cool things we carry around with us all the time. They're a lot like computers, right? They contain your emails, they can contain your calendars, your contact books, but they also, you interact with them much more frequently. They have sensitivities like location information associated with them. different in that, unlike your computer, you don't actually control everything that goes on your mobile device, right? So there's a bunch of players in the ecosystem, as Tim laid out. There's the carrier, there's the handset maker, this is like HTC, or Samsung. There's the, the platform maker, which is, Google, Apple, et cetera. There's the app developers, there's the advertisers, and there's the analytics companies. And so you don't actually have complete control on your device, and so sometimes the device comes preloaded with apps from the platform maker, from the carrier. Sometimes there's decisions made about what apps have access to or advertisers have access to that are outside of your control. So there's a unique set of issues that are specific to mobile devices that didn't exist in the PC space, or at least we have solved in PC browser space, right? So typically on your computer, you would download an application, and it was you download it from a known developer like Microsoft. That application will have complete access to all the information on your computer, but you kind of trusted the application developer, and that application wasn't necessarily networked, right? So Microsoft Office in early days wouldn't upload your information to Office servers, or Microsoft servers, although that's changed now. In the mobile space, when you download an application, it could be coming from some dude in his underwear that wrote it last night in his bedroom. They're typically networked up, so they transmit data out to the cloud or to the application developer's servers. There's not a lot of transparency. You can't right now install firewall software that prevents the transmission of certain information that's locked down by the carriers. And so we see kind of a complex ecosystem that's just emerging, that's quite new. I'll support that. But there's a lot of mixed incentives too, right? So you have oftentimes the developers of these platforms, right? So Google, for example, receives no money from the sale of the actual operating system, right? So they receive their revenue from the sale of apps and the sale of advertisement. And so why that's interesting is that in order to facilitate a rich ecosystem for advertising, you need to share certain data that facilitates targeting, right? Ad targeting, and the more information, the better the ad targeting. Same with apps, right? You want to have a rich ecosystem of apps that people want to use. You want to facilitate those apps have access to the front sensors on the device, the camera, and the microphone. And so some of the incentives are also mixed on the side of who is providing protections on these devices. We see a few threats in this space, right? So some of the threats come from new developers that don't necessarily have good practices with regards to security. They store information insecurely on the device, or they transmit information insecurely. You see some threats simply by the platform provides access to information, right? So until recently, the Google platform provides permission dialogues for when you install an app, it will ask you whether you want to permit certain location information or access to your address book. They have no permissions for access to photos, right? So that was just an omission. On the Apple side, with the exception of location, there's nothing that an app can't access, right? So an app can access all of the information on your phone simply by you installing the app. And it's up to you to meet the privacy policy. Additionally, in the Apple space, we rely on the Apple Store, the iTunes Store, which is where you download the apps from. We rely on them to curate the apps and catch kind of surprising practices or potential privacy problematic practices, but this is subjective in terms of we rely on Apple to do this. It's not clear where their privacy lines, where they draw the privacy lines. And one of the key issues is, unlike again with the PC, it's not clear how much of the kind of protections for consumers or controls for consumers are provided by the platform. So the operating system restricting access to certain information, how much is provided by the Apple Store curating the information, and how much is up to the consumer. And I think there's these gray areas with a lot of, how much is it my responsibility, and how much is it about being curated and taken care of? And I think that causes a lot of confusion as well. We're seeing some interesting trends in terms of, companies trying to do the right thing. Apple trying to deprecate, for example, this persistent identifier called the UDID. It's this thing that facilitates tracking across applications. It's like a permanent serial number for your device that allows third parties to know. It's kind of like a cookie, but it's like super cookie. You can't delete it. It's persisting the device. We're seeing some pressure to deprecate that or remove that from the device. And we're seeing a lot of incentives on the side of advertisers and app makers to circumvent that deprecation and find their own solution to track uniquely.
Let's go back to your UDID and the UDID identifiers and cookies thing. I've done this presentation, walked everything into mobile privacy in 30 minutes, which is like a huge crunch, and we just have to do it before. So we'll look back a lot of those.
content. And how they do that is through online advertising, and they make up more than 86% of the online advertising you see today. And so one of the things that's very important to that is, of course, consumer trust and brand trust. And how do you do that? Well, consumer privacy is an important piece or a component of that. And the industry has already made that commitment. When you think about the Digital Advertising Alliance, of which the IAB is a member, we have a longstanding commitment and a successful self-regulatory program for online behavioral advertising and multi-site data. It was recently endorsed by the administration this past January or February. I might be mixing up the date a little here, but we've seen a lot of success with that program, and it's really based on some key principles of education, notice, and choice. Giving the consumer control, essentially telling them what the practices you are doing, and then giving them the option, the choice, to make their decision based on that. Because what we found is that privacy means something different to everyone, right? I mean, Tim mentioned this, how do you define privacy? Well, consumer expectations for privacy are so varied that you have to be able to do it in such a way that you inform the consumer of what is happening and then allow them to make that decision. And so what we are aggressively working on doing, because the mobile marketplace is so key to our industry in the future of this space, is working on building up that Digital Advertising Alliance program to the mobile space. We're incorporating principles that target exactly the uniqueness of the mobile ecosystem. So as Ashkan and Patty both mentioned, there are some very unique differences within the mobile space than the desktop. So, for example, new parties, you have the carriers, the OS, the handset manufacturers. We are dealing with a different environment for application developers versus what a mobile website browser does. We're also talking about a device that's with you all the time. You carry it everywhere. Apparently, some people sleep with it. I don't want to know who you are, but you know, you keep that to yourself. There's a lot that can happen that you are doing on that mobile device. You're banking on it. You're talking to friends. You're doing emails. You're taking photos. And so along with that comes that data, as well as things like where you are. It can be location. It can be precise or hyperlocation. We now have issues of applications sharing data with each other. We have issues of data moving across applications to websites. And so how do we control that? So the DAA self-regulatory program, which I'm pleased to say we should be able to announce by early summer, is looking specifically at those issues. How do we address making sure and understanding that location information can be more sensitive? How do we make sure that we provide consumers the notice that that data collection is happening and give them the choice to either, you know, consent to that or to opt out of it? Similarly, when you're talking about things like personal applications, you know, email, calendar, address books, you know, we saw the PATH episode where it was released that it had been culling address book data. Well, of course, I think it's common sense to all of us that you should know about that and you should consent to that before that practice takes place. So these are important things to look at and address. We do believe that the industry will be able to come and rise to the challenge with that and with our self-regulatory program, but we're certainly still working on that, and it's an evolving ecosystem.
Thanks, Sarah. So we've talked about the mobile space is very personal. These devices are personal. You sleep with them. App developers code them in their underwear at night, as Ashkan said. So I think Ashkan was saying that not to be pejorative to app developers, but Todd, since you are an app developer, you know, is there anything to that? No, but I just wanted to just ask you, like, from your perspective as part of the ecosystem, how do you view these things?
Okay, thanks. I'm Todd Moore, and I started a company back when Apple first opened up the App Store and gave, you know, independent developers like myself the opportunity and the chance to innovate and create apps. And it's a market I thoroughly enjoyed, and I'm worried about it. And I think everyone is. That's why we're here. Privacy is a big issue. And so I guess I'm here today for one to represent developers that are out there. I'm also a member of the Application Developers Alliance, and which is attempting to unify the voice of developers so that we are heard. I have a lot of strong opinions when it comes to privacy, not only as a software developer, but as, you know, consumer of hundreds of apps that I use all the time. And I think what's interesting is we do need a set of best practices because everyone's doing it differently. If you look at the Android phones, they implement security and privacy completely different than your iPhone. And it's just completely different mindsets where on the iPhone, there is isolation there. I don't have access to various things access to your address book and your calendar events. And I think, you know, and with the news of Path coming out and exposing that it was uploading your address book, you know, these are important things. We should be notified as a consumer if an application requires that level of access. If you look at the Android market, they list out all the permissions that the application will use up front before you install it. I think that's a good solution too. It's important to know that. But from my end, I can tell you I have an application that's very popular that plays sounds. And one of the things that you want to do as an app that's going to play sounds is when the phone rings, you want to turn that off so the person can take the call. Well, I have to ask permission. I have to get permission to read the phone state and the phone identifiers and all this other stuff. And if it's too much, I don't want that level of access. So right there, it fails on the Android side because a lot of consumers will download my app and be like, why are you asking for those levels of permissions, even though I'm not using them? So from a developer side, that too, even though it's great that you know that I'm using something, but you could interpret that, and it often is interpreted by customers that could be malicious activity. So there needs to be something more. There needs to be a chance for me to explain, you know, this is why I'm requesting this level of access, and this is what we're doing with it. Because, you know, I like to think of, you know, when you buy a candy bar, what's in it? You look at the ingredients. Is it bad for me? And that's kind of what the Android market is trying to do. But sometimes the ingredients are just too generic, and you need to be able to tell the end user, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and certainly in privacy policies and all that is great, but nobody reads that stuff. So it needs to be easier. I like what I'm seeing from the iPhone side of things as far as location. You have to answer yes or no. You allow this app access to your location. I think that needs to be extended possibly to other things like your address book and your calendar. I also think you should be notified at point of installation. This is what the application is going to do. These are the libraries that the application is using. These are the things that, you know, like you were saying with the wallpaper app, if it's going to, you know, access your address book and your network, there's something wrong with that. So I think if I can, at least the reason I'm here is to kind of give you, from my point of view, from a developer's point of view, in regards to both platforms. So I write apps on both Android and iPhone, so I certainly have some opinions as to what I think it should be. And to be honest, I think it's a mix between what I'm seeing on Android and iPhone today.
So, as I said in my opening, I think you have these, you know, Congress is obviously going to be holding hearings. The Senate has one coming up next week, I believe, on privacy. There's been ongoing hearings in the House. The White House has called for legislation. The Federal Trade Commission has put out its report that includes some aspects of legislation, but all of them are urging best practices to be developed very quickly. And you know, we have some really huge open questions, and I'm not trying to be obtuse. The fact is we're not even sure what privacy is. We're not sure what just-in-time disclosure should be. How do we do this? One of the big questions is, what is privacy? And that's really a trite, often discussed term. But in defense of the wallpaper app, I personally would have no idea where to buy wallpaper. I don't have a single clue. Like, I don't even know what store to sell it. But if I was looking at wallpaper in an app, and they were able to tell me, well, there's a wallpaper store, you know, a mile from you or a mile from your house, I think that would be interesting, and they'd have to know my location for that. So the privacy aspect of this is really interesting, so it's hard to tell. You know, if they ask me up front, why do you need to look? What do you do? And I don't know if they actually do this in that app, because I don't have it. But the question is, it's really kind of tricky.
So, I think you can, like I've said this before, I think you can think of privacy as surprise management, right? So making sure that people are on board with what you're doing and what your app does and what your advertising does. And it's a difficult thing to do. We're talking about really complex new ecosystems and different levels of understanding of the privacy and the underlying mechanisms. But I think, you know, we can put incentives on the side of people who develop apps and develop platforms to make sure that, you know, the insider, you know, people that use these platforms are brought along and are not surprised by the functionality. And if you just
social network app, or it would allow a social network app to access the location. Most users would require nothing. It's more about the app kind of surreptitiously reaching in and grabbing location.
Okay, so doesn't that, you know, this price management aspect of disclosure, okay, doesn't that kind of fly in the face of, like Patty was talking about, is just-in-time disclosures? Back in the day, in kind of the PC web browsing world, we talked about giving consumers notice at or before the time of collection. And you're saying that maybe doesn't work in mobile spaces every time.
No, I'm not saying so. So whatever the best mechanism to make sure that people are understanding what is happening is, and put that onus on developers, right? So think of commerce, right? So there's some set of information that goes in the glove box, which is the manual that nobody reads. And there's some things that go on the dash, the flash, when you need oil or when you need to do something. I think, you know, don't put it in reverse while you're driving really fast, that kind of stuff. And it's dependent on the car you have, whether it has four-wheel drive, you have different options. But it's up to the car maker to make sure that the important things are prominently displayed at the time. It's important and people aren't surprised and they don't go blowing up the car. Right?
By the way, I was just tweeting that you were speaking. And your autocorrect name on my Android is Patty Possible. So they're gonna need that for this workshop by May 30th.
Wow, that's a lot to live up to. And I do want to say, I realize I forgot to say at the beginning that these are my own views of that speaking on behalf of the commission. I just want to follow on to what Ashton was saying, because that principle of unexpected, not surprising consumers, is discussed in our report about privacy report, as you talk about commonly accepted practices. So the idea of this is, you know, for things, if I'm purchasing something and they're filling in my address to ship something to me, I probably get that. And I don't need tons and tons of disclosure to explain that to me. But tell me the things that I might be concerned about if you're going to give that address to somebody else, or it's going to be used in some unexpected way. So the report does list out several commonly accepted practices that companies, that the fraud prevention, fraud prevention, security, product fulfillment, those types of things where you probably don't have to have that same level. But instead, so don't clutter up my notices with lots of all of those kinds of things that I might expect, but give me the things that I might care about at the time that I'm making the decision. I could just add to that, too. I mean, one of the things is striking the right balance with notice, right? You know, I think it does need to be upfront, you know, when you're making that decision or when that event is happening. Not necessarily every time you open your application, you're confronted with a notice, because what's going to happen is consumers going to stop using that application. I mean, we all are aware of this. You know, it's annoying when, you know, your browser tells you it wants to send back information for reporting and you're constantly clicking no, you know. Which that information is helpful to the browser to improve your service, but when it's repeated, right, you're less likely to use it. So making sure there's a right balance on the notice. The other part of that is sort of that what you were getting to is what is privacy and what do we expect in terms of what we expect for notice and disclosure. You mentioned Girls Around Us or Girls Around Me application in the description of this panel, and if I could, let me use that as an example. So I think privacy is incredibly subjective. And when you're talking about an application like Girls Around Me, for those of you not familiar, it was an application that would pull information from Foursquare check-ins, and if you had linked your Foursquare account to your Facebook, possibly your picture would pop up, and you could be in a given location and see what women were around you at that given time. So for me, personally, subjectively, on the creepy scale of 1 to 10, that's a 10 creepy. But take it out of that context and what that application itself did. So Foursquare had an API that allowed that information to be pulled by this application. So people were publicly posting where they were. This is, you have to stop and take a step back a little bit here. People are choosing to alert the public that I am currently at Starbucks right now, and that they have also set up their settings to link it to their Facebook page so that their photo and their information is there. Now, it should have been alerted that this application, or that there was a possibility that that information was being shared with other third parties to create that circumstance. But we can't be quick to demonize this system and set up, because there's potential future products and services that people who have lesser privacy expectations and are willing to force that, to hand that information over, might enjoy or appreciate from that service. check in, that you're at the conference and you want to network, well, maybe there's an application for that. So things like ambient social networking that are coming out here in the landscape, we don't want to be so quick to pass judgment. I do think that when on its face you look at girls around us, for me subjectively as a consumer, that really, you know, bothers me and hits my privacy scale, but I think there are other people who might view that differently. And so really the question came down to telling the consumer and providing them the option and the setting to control that.
I can just add that that particular application, although very creepy, there's other apps out there that are currently doing it, and it's perfectly acceptable, I guess. Take a look at Banjo. They display the same information. They don't filter by gender, but it's easy enough to make that filter your own because they show, you know, everyone who's around you. And I think it just brings up the point, what is wrong with, displaying publicly available information? That's all that application did. Yes, it's creepy, but so who's at fault for that? Well, I think the people that are posting their GPS locations publicly are the ones at fault, and I think you have to educate them. And I think that comes from Foursquare, that comes from Twitter, that comes from Facebook. All of those social networks need to have better controls and properly educate those who are posting their location, what that means, because if it's out on the internet, anyone can grab it and scrape it and display it in different ways.
Okay, this is where that notion of context comes into play. I absolutely agree that it's public data and everyone can access it and display it, but I think we can try to exercise some manners with regards to app development or data display that I think will help facilitate as people come on board and start to realize that this might be what they're feeling, helping the ecosystem by exercising some manners or some control. So the path example is a good one, and I've used this example before, which is the operating system allows access to context, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone should just go in and reach for it, right? And how you navigate this with notice is like how you navigate someone coming to your house. As a guest, right, if that person reaches into your fridge right when they walk in the door and takes a soda, you might take offense, right? If they asked you for a soda, you would probably hand it over to them without any concern. If they kept asking you every day they came over for a soda, you'd like, stop asking. I already said you could grab it, just grab it. But if you hadn't seen them in a couple months and they come over and they reach into your fridge unannounced, that might be problematic. I think exercising these manners helps bridge this gap between where people are at, right? So with girls around me, why not? Could go further and make drunk girls around me, right? So you could monitor the frequency of check-ins at bars on Foursquare and try to estimate blood alcohol content and then match that up with hot or not to only match up with hot girls. And then, I think you can get more creepy and more problematic with public data. I don't think it should be a justification.
Well, I think that begs the question about, how do you find creepy, or as Robert Scoble likes to call it, freaky. Apparently, that for a man, it's freaky. For a woman, it's creepy. It could be a gender difference here. But I've actually heard privacy advocates say that girls around me is a very good thing. It's the new vanguard of consumer education. Back in the day, you'd say, well, we need these tips for privacy. Never disclose your personal information to somebody you don't know. Things like that, they're all meaningless today in the whole marketplace. But an app, if developed to educate, I don't think that was their intent to educate, but it actually has educated a lot of people about what they're sharing, how they're sharing it, and it's public API, you're putting this information out, it's cobbled together, and wow, it rose to the level of Sarah's creepy meter. Is this type of these apps that you've vanguard in consumer education?
I think it did illustrate a point, and it has illustrated a point. And I think what we're talking about is what we have been talking about. I just want to make sure we delineate between the two. So it's one thing for the consumer understands what they're posting publicly and what they're sharing publicly, but a big piece of this is the invisible collection. The consumers can't see and can't understand. And I want to make sure when you talk about the two, making sure that there are differences there, and making sure right now there are a lot of things that consumers cannot possibly see. We might talk about the folks who think they're publicly posting and they may or may not understand how those settings work, but the stuff that they can't see that's being collected and shared is a big piece of this. I want to make sure we're not mixing the two.
So we had this Romley, right? You guys remember that one where I was monitoring a Twitter stream to tell you who you should rob? And that was a proof of concept app to show the Vanguard feels about me that guys were actually serious about, yeah, which is different. So yeah, we've had this kind of thing. Just look like the person tweeting on that caucus, you might want to put a period in front of their replies so they're not at replies, so that they go out publicly.
Speaking of education, so educating on Twitter. You know, I think Patty makes a great point. And, you know, distinguishing between, for example, the public information as well as the information that you're not necessarily seeing, things that are happening in the background, there's a lot of great opportunity for education through similar to what our self-regulatory program does, right? So what we hope to do is enable very similar mechanism as to what you see today. When you look at the desktop and you see an advertisement, and there's a little blue icon in the upper right-hand corner. What you're able to do is to mouse over that icon and get a brief description of what is actually happening, because you may not be aware that there is a third party on that website. You know, today you're on MSNBC, but, you know, ValueClick is on that website as well. It has dropped a cookie and is collecting information about your activity. Well, what that does is enables them to serve targeted advertising to you. And so what you're able to do is learn what those practices are, what's happening, and then if you wish to go further and then opt out, you can choose which companies you want to opt out of or click that to opt out all of them. And so what we hope to do is to transfer that over to the mobile space. Now, technologically, there's some very real differences. Notice and disclosure, there's some very real differences. It's a small screen. I don't know how many of you have noticed that the advertisements in your free application are usually about, you know, yay big. So how do we give you notice of what practices are happening? That's something that we're aggressively working on to figure out. But what it comes down to is the ability to disclose to the consumer that, yes, these practices are happening. This is what's being done with your data. And then give the consumer the choice how they want to respond to that. And so I think that's very important. Now, there's also very different sensitive information that a consumer may need enhanced notice of, may need more options than just choice. It may be more of a consent structure, and that could be when you're looking at precise location information or personal applications. Furthermore, also giving notice that the data isn't just being collected within your application, but across all your applications, or possibly across your applications to your mobile browser. And so that really comes down to the issue of the education, is how do we educate consumers that of the activities that are happening, let them know when it's happening right at that moment, and then give them the choice to exercise.
I have one question I want to ask before we go to questions, and I have like three more questions in case we don't get questions from the audience. Before I go to questions from the audience, I wanted to ask Todd, I hear all the time, and even on this a little bit of this panel, is this question of like what's really different here is you have these software developers, unlike in the old PC space, right? You have these software developers are like dudes in their underwear in the bedroom, you know, hacking and typing away on these very, very small organizations. And there's an implication, there's a certain cluelessness or lack of sophistication with regard to these people. And this is why the software is being written that isn't really sensitive to the fair information practices of limited collection, collecting what you need, proper disclosure. Do you think that's fair? And again, I'm just generalizing what I'm hearing here in the city and in public policy circles. Is that fair when it comes to the entire ecosystem?
Well, I will say, I don't put my underwear. I don't know why I keep breathing. But my concern here is that you're putting too much on the developer to handle everything that we've been talking about today. And yes, there's going to be applications that were written by people that probably you shouldn't be downloading to your phone, and that probably exists more on Android. In terms of malware, because there's no review process, at least with Apple, there's this perception of a walled garden. At least someone human has looked at the application and has verified that the feature list does, in fact, represent what the application is doing. But I think that gives a false sense of security as well, so that has its own issues. I really want to stress here that I feel there's three components here. There's one, the end user who needs to be educated no matter what. The person that downloads the app needs to understand privacy and what it means to post information on the internet. Two, the application developer shouldn't be held completely responsible as to what the application is doing. There's measures that can be libraries that the app is using. And I think the iPhone does some things right by shielding out your phone calls and your voicemail and your text messages and completely shields app developers like myself from getting access to that. But they don't, there's things that they're dropping the ball on. Once I agree to location, apps then have complete access to my photo roll. I think that's wrong. I don't think I should be able to download your address book and upload it to the internet without your permission. These are things that can be fixed by the platform. Again, though, we don't, like we were talking about earlier, we don't want our phones to constantly nag us either. We don't want a Windows Vista issue on our phone where every little thing the app does is going to prompt for, can it do it or not? So there needs to be some balance between both. Once you install and download an application, it actually tells you these are the modules and components that the application is using. We need to provide a level of education so you can make a good decision on that. And two, when apps are using your address book or private information like that, there should be some type of notification. Currently, there is not on the iPhone or Android that your phone is using your address book. You'll see network activity, but you don't know what's going on. So I think to say it's up to the application developer is great, and there is a lot of responsibility there. I'm not trying to get out of responsibility. I'm just saying I would feel safer as a consumer if more safeguards were in place on the platform itself.
To Todd's point, I do think he's right that we can't just sort of put all this baggage on the application developers. This is a shared responsibility for everyone in that ecosystem, and while we need the application developers to step up, we need to continue educating them. I do think it's a noble effort to assume that we can get every single app developer who's creating something every day to make sure to have the right manners, to make sure to have the right policy effort. And so it does have to be a shared responsibility. It has to be the application developer. It has to be the third party the application developer is using to help monetize that application. It has to be the carrier, the OS platform, go down the entire chain to analytics. So in that case, that's where our program comes in, because we are working with all of those parties. We have the carriers, we have the OSs at the table, we're talking to the platforms, the handset manufacturers, to make sure that we can all be part of the system. And again, to focus on the practices, right, not the parties or the technology, but to focus on the actual practices themselves. Because at the end of the day, this has to be a consumer-facing effort, right? It has to be as simple as possible and easy to understand for the consumer. And then on the back end, we can all work together to figure out how to do it the right way. And so I think Todd's absolutely right that we can't just throw this baggage completely and exclusively on application developers. Yeah, I was just going to add to that, isn't that where having some established standards or best practices that are that level the playing field, so that if we have the app developers don't have to figure them all out, the smaller guys don't have to figure everything out, but they know what to do because there's been some set standards and it levels the playing field.
I just want to push back on, so I absolutely agree that it's a shared responsibility, but in terms of that notion of consumer facing, the application developer is in the best position of everyone in the ecosystem to understand the consumer expectation and manage that. The platforms themselves, like Apple, that's actually a misnomer. Apple doesn't review every single app that gets in their app store by a human. They look for the application, but they don't block up the application, and they don't check the data transmissions. Right? The relying on what the platform provides as an excuse has been a call-out we've seen time and time again in the browser space, too, when people say, well, the browser platforms provide the ability to set flash cookies, so we're going to actually just use it. It's not our fault. It's the platform's. I think that's actually a cop-out. We went and hold UPS responsible for its group that we ultimately purchased from Amazon. I don't think we should rely on the platforms or the underlying mechanisms as solely the people. I think that the developers are in the best place to handle these kind of surprises. As an example, I was playing with Instagram last night, and Instagram, they just got acquired by Facebook for, I think, $1 billion, just kind of ridiculous. When you take a photo on Instagram, and the photo starts transmitting instantly to, you should know because it's called Instagram, but it gets sent to Instagram servers instantly before you select any of the sharing options or you hit done, right? And so that's something that happens under the operating system. As an app reviewer at Apple, they would say, well, this is to improve performance, obviously, but they have to disclose that in some way.
to me, it's what the app is doing secretly without my knowledge. I think that's a bigger issue.
Any questions, Larry? And Larry, if you could speak up and identify yourself. I'm sorry, I don't have a microphone. So because we don't have a microphone, Larry's name for the camera. Larry's basically asking, is the trade-offs, so the trade-off is that we want the functionality, we want the value, we have kind of brushed aside the privacy concerns, and that's the question.
Well, I do think what, at the end of the day, we are dealing with consumers, and consumers consume, right? They make their decisions. I'll also add that consumers are getting more savvy. You know, I Pew did a research on social media and how consumers were reacting to their privacy settings. And just in the last 2 years, it's more than doubled in the number of people who are reviewing their privacy settings and utilizing them and setting them. That said, consumers are also reviewing them and choosing not to activate them, which is a different and unique situation here. We're talking about consumers who decide that, you know what, I'm okay giving up some of my information in order to either A, have this app for free, or B, to broadcast my information. Education still has to be there. I do think that we have to continue that education. We actually have a consumer education campaign that we've rolled out with more than a trillion ad impressions to help in terms of online advertising and targeted advertising. I think we do need broader. We need to continue that education piece and keep it going. But we are seeing consumers make decisions, and often and increasingly informed decisions.
Yeah, too, that are. I don't think consumers do understand. I mean, our report talks about there's a lot of data collection going on that's invisible that consumers don't understand and don't see and can't make a choice because they didn't realize it. But we also see reports that show consumers are concerned about privacy. But within the mobile space, if there's no, for instance, in our kids app report, when we looked at the disclosures that were available for a parent trying to make a decision before they download an app, if I'm concerned about privacy for my kid and I want to download the app, we looked at the apps in the app stores and we found very little information available. And I think that even if you're concerned, there's not much you could do to find out what's happening with the app, let alone if you even understand some of the capabilities that Ashton was describing at the beginning of this panel. If you don't even know what to ask for and look for, it's pretty tough.
I think this is where that interesting public policy question comes in, right? So I agree with Patty that most consumers don't know the data that flows off our app, especially for third parties, and most of those transmissions are invisible. But for the most part, you can look at behavioral economics around this stuff, right? People discount risks in the future for immediate gratification now. People tend to kind of bias towards new shiny versus like kind of safety features. This is why we have legislation on seatbelts or purchasing insurance, right? So if it came to like you buying a car because it's fast versus you buying a car for airbags, only recently have we seen people selecting car safety, right? And I think this is kind of reflected in this space as well. How we address that is a really good question.
Let me see if we have another question. So two questions.
Sure. Well, I can't give the commission's thoughts. Let me be clear about that. These are my thoughts. So, as for the desktop versus the device itself, and we're well aware that there's two ways to download. And there's a couple things. So, first, for the desktop, may actually be the place that a parent would look if the kid is holding the device and the parent wants to look. But even if that's not the case, we did look at if this, first of all, by doing the desktop procedure, it was certainly easier to capture and be able to look at a large volume of the promotion pages. But secondly, there isn't a big difference between the two, and we did look at that before we made that decision. But there isn't a big difference. The disclosures are not that different. There are a couple of them. We identify them actually in the methodology section of the report, but there isn't a huge distinction in terms of what information was available for parents there that we could see. And as to the second comment, our question about the disclosures and whether there might be some structure, I think what you're talking about is what we suggest in the report and recommend is that all the players in the ecosystem get together to think about and figure out some ways to give effective and meaningful choice to parents and how to give them this information. And we didn't lay out specifically, you've got to use this icon or you've got to put it in this place. One of the things that we asked for the industry to look at is what is an effective way to convey this information to parents and how to do that effectively. privacy panel. It's going to be at the .com workshop. It's on May 30th. It's a free event. It's at our New Jersey Avenue building here in D.C., but it also will be webcast. But that will be the panel that's on mobile privacy to talk about how do you effectively give disclosure on the mobile device.
Okay. If anybody, I want to make sure that we have Jason Weinstein, Mike Bojan, and Sharon Franklin in the audience. I'll do a quick transition after this last question. So if anybody has any question.
I think in that particular case, I think that was where Foursquare quickly realized that this was happening, not realizing that it could happen, pulled that API, and if they did know what was happening, should have disclosed to the consumers at the outset that in addition to making your information public, third parties may use this information and data too in their other applications. And so I wouldn't argue that it's particularly the onus is completely on the consumer in that situation. I think Foursquare quickly recognized that there was a situation here, and that's why they pulled the API so quickly.
I mean, even if you pull the API, you can still get that information. I think it does fall on the consumer. All that he's doing is taking publicly available information and putting it on a map. I don't understand why. Creepy. It's not some of the business I would ever get. But again, there's other apps that do it. Banjo does it right now. I mean, it's publicly available information. So it has to be education to the consumer in that regard. If they don't know that they're posting their information for the world to see, that's a serious problem.
I was just going to say, too, as part of our privacy roundtable review, one of the things, one of the reasons that we wanted to do that, that staff thought it was a good idea, was because of the incredible increase in computing capacity and the ability to capture and hold and hang on to for years and years lots and lots of data that can be used in lots of different ways. And the technology has just taken off. And whether consumers understand that data can be around forever and ever and keep being reused and processed in real time is a big issue.
Yeah, again, just in my aspect, as digital citizens, developers, and people that use this data could just take better practices. There's a lot of creepy things you can do in real life, and we just don't do that because, people are badly on them, but we can't do that at the scale. We can do some of these other practices. And as someone that facilitates this technology and uses this information, I think just some cognizant responsibility on how people might feel about the use of this information, I think, is a good starting point as well. So developer manners, basically.
Yeah, that's fine. You can post those best practices, but what you're going to end up is you're not going to have a standardized anything. So you're going to have a lot of different apps, a lot of different developers all doing their own thing in different ways, and it's not going to be standard. It's not going to be consistent. And that's a problem, and that's why I think platform makers, whether it's Foursquare or iPhone or Android, they're in the best position to create a standardized solution.
Well, we're obviously really interesting questions. We really don't have enough time. I feel like we could spend hours longer, but no torture, everybody. We have Jason Weinstein for the Department of Justice on the next panel with Sharon and Greg Bojan. I'm going to ask them to start moving towards the panel table. I want to thank all the panelists. Ashkan's going up to New York to speak. Sarah's going down to New Orleans to speak. Patty, you have your May 30th disclosures workshop. That's going to be really interesting. I encourage you all to go. And Todd is local and is hacking out apps, right? So I